Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge, and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. Now, there's no set schedule. It's just whenever I finish a book, I do the review and stick it up here on the podcast feed. Now, this is a special episode. I say it's a special episode. The only thing special about it is that I'm recording it live, going out on Ustream, and we'll take questions or comments or anything like that. If anyone's going to pop in here, there's got a few people watching. It says like 8 people watching or something at the moment. So that's a good enough live audience. I only announced it there on Twitter a few hours ago saying, hey, I'm at home and I've got a book to review, let's do it. So little bit of news, I made some notes here that I wanted to say. First of all, yes, episode number 64, which means that this episode makes us level with all the other podcasts that I've done on my other podcast that called The Juggling Podcast. Pola and I, we recorded many episodes of that up to episode number 64, and now we're on episode number 64 as the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast, which means, 128 podcasts, regular podcasts from me, which I think is pretty cool. Also, a little bit of news, my latest travels have been to, which, again, it's why I don't have the book that I want to review here right in front of me. It's because I was on a cruise ship going up to the Arctic Circle and to Spitsbergen, Longyearbyen in Spitsbergen, and down to Iceland and places like that. And then from there, I had to travel back on a flight and get up very early in the morning and do a street show festival, which was quite a lot of work. And then we came back to Berlin, and we couldn't get in home because we have a subletter here. But finally today, we finally managed to get into our home. So I thought, well, you know, been so busy, haven't really had a chance to do a podcast review of this novel. So now I'm finally back in Berlin, finally at home. Thought I'd do a live show here. So the book that I'm going to review, get straight onto reviewing now, is the classic book from Ray Bradbury. He wrote it back in 1951, first published in 1953. It's called Fahrenheit 451. And there's a few reasons why I read this book. First of all, one of the reasons I read the book is because I just found it in the library, and I saw it then. I thought, well, there's this one, and there's some of the classic science fiction books in the library on the cruise ship. You know, there was 1984, and there was Brave New World, and I thought, well, these are all quite interesting, you know, because they're in the literature classics section of the library, not in the general fiction. I thought, well, it's quite good to see so much science fiction represented there, because there was a lot of other things there. There was the Time Machine, and there was some War of the Worlds, other books that I've read many times. So I thought, well, I'll pick one of these books and read it. And I thought, okay, let's do the Fahrenheit 451. The reason is because there's this blog that I subscribe to, and it's called by a screenwriter who posts anonymously, called The Mystery Man on Film. And he said, hey, there's this new script out by Frank Darabont, who wrote Shawshank Redemption. I guess that's his most famous film. And so he wants to he wrote the script, and Mystery Man of Film, this blogger, said, hey, this script, Fahrenheit 451, is the best script I've read all year. And it's also, he says, and then I went back and read the original book, and it's a really great book. So I was thinking, oh, is it really as good? Because I've not read this for a few years. I have read it maybe 2 or 3 times before, but I thought, hey, I'll give it another go and see if it really is as good as he said it was. So yeah, the book was there, it was available. I had a motive, and the crime was committed. I started reading. Now, let's get straight on to the setting of the book. It's set, of course, in the future, but in the future from 1951, of course. And in the future, everyone's house is fireproofed. There's no such thing as a fireman needed, because, well, you don't need it, because there's no fires or anything like that, of course. So instead, the firemen have a different job. And the book starts off with this sort of like great sort of setting of the scene of the firemen going out with their truck, going out, turning up to someone's house and setting fire to the house. Well, not to the house, but the things inside the house, specifically the all the books in there. And you worked out that in the future, it's a sanctioned activity for firemen not to put out fires, but to cause fires and to burn books. Apart from that, I found actually this the whole setup of the future is quite bland. You know, there's inner city, but the city is never named. You just think, okay, some kind of central city, you know, in America, definitely in America, and you know, the Cold War is still going on. But there's not a whole lot explained about the city. But then again, I think that's probably the point of the book, that it's quite a vague, it's sort of like in every city, you know, you don't actually have to worry about which city it is, it's sort of more generic city in America. And there's other ways that it's quite bland as well. You know, it's, you never really get any descriptions of the streets. You never really get very many descriptions of the houses. Well, you do in some ways, but there's not a whole lot going on there. You know, you read about the main character's house and he goes out into the garden. You're like, oh, they have gardens then, do they? So that's a bit strange. But underneath all of the sort of blandness and this sort of government suppression of reading, there's also this very horrific level of nihilism and sort of violence as well. It talks about people getting killed on the streets, and there's like a minimum speed limit that you're allowed to do when you're driving, and it encourages people to drive really, really quickly for not much reason. When people, a lot of people seem to die on the roads and get driven down, and kids kill each other. It talks about, you know, all the kids are killing each other these days, and this person's committing suicide and that person's committing suicide. So it's a very dark future, very dystopic, you know, dystopia kind of future, because I'll get into some more of these points later on. So that's the setting, you know. And it is a very, it's like a classic science fiction setting now, you know, with the books being banned. Yeah, it's a very well-known book, of course. Moving on to the story. Now, the story follows the a fireman called Guy Montag. And Guy, you like say, the scene starts of him going out and burning books. And the opening line of the book is, "It's good to burn," you know, and it's a fantastic opening line. It's a fantastic opening sequence of him going out and burning these books. But you realise quite quickly that there's other elements in his life. You see, you know, you're not quite sure. There's some hidden secret there. He goes home and he looks up behind his grill, behind the air conditioning vent in his house, and you go, okay, well, there's something going on there. You know, there's some kind of, you know, secret there. So there's, you know, he's a little bit more depth than just a shallow book burner. And then you go on to like the next sort of section of the book, very near the beginning, and he meets another character called Clarice, or Clarissa. And Clarissa is this like 17-year-old girl who's very free, and she's all happy with life, and everything's woo, yeah, it's all great. And she talks to Guy and sort of questions him, and for the first time after 10 years of being a fireman, he seems to wake up and see the world through her eyes, you know, see things in a slightly different way. But you realise actually he's already been going in this direction, and Clarice is just the catalyst, the thing that sets him off in this new direction. And then suddenly she disappears, and you think, well, how did she die? Or where did she go to? And you find out actually it's rumoured that she was hit by a car, maybe while riding a bike or a velocipede or something like that. And then, you know, there's like, because she just disappears for the rest of the book, it's like an abrupt loss for both Guy, and that's like just meeting Clarissa was one thing, but then her disappearing was really what sets him off, you know, questioning the authority, questioning the whole reason behind book burning and all that kind of stuff. And yes, it follows his, and he gets slowly more wound up in himself, slowly more sort of descent into madness, descent into sort of like railing against the whole system and everything like that. And I've just realised that I haven't pressed record on the video record, so I'll press that now. Start record. It's okay. So the people just joining us on the video, yes, I've already started doing it. I've talked about a little bit about the setup of Fahrenheit 451. I've talked a little bit about the beginning of the story. If you don't know that much, you're not a science fiction fan, because you should have read this book already. Anyway, so so what happens is that we follow the story of Guy Montag, and Guy Montag is the fireman, and he's burning books, but, you know, questioning authority as he goes through. We do meet other characters along the way. The fire chief called Beatty, and his wife called Mildred, and a professor that he meets later on called Faber. Some other things that I want to talk about a little bit in this story is that I realised this time reading the book that it seems to follow very much the story of two suicides. Because two suicide attempts. What happens is that Guy comes back from this first fire, book-burning outing, fireman outing, and he finds his wife has taken an overdose, and he doesn't seem to care about this woman who, you know, is his wife, and you think, well, this should be quite important to him. But it turns out that's actually not too important to him in some ways, because, you know, he just calls it up, and it sort of, like, affects him in some ways. But then there's this other suicide that happens later on, which I'm just going to give this away. What happens is that they go to burn these books, and this woman is so absorbed by her books that she doesn't want to give them up. And in the end, she commits suicide by burning herself alongside the books that are being burnt at the same time, which is quite horrific, and it catches everyone by surprise. It catches Beatty by surprise. It catches Guy Montag by surprise. It sort of catches the reader by surprise, but you see what's going to happen here. This is these two suicides in the book, which really, like I say, these are also another two you know, catalyst events, you know, critical events in Guy Montag's life and his descent into madness, and as I said, his descent into dissent against the government. But yeah, the characters are very interesting. Now, it really comes across for me very much so in the writing style, I think, because the writing style is all disjointed, and you realise that, you know, these sentences just lead up somewhere and then they don't go anywhere else, and then they sort of stop, and then it goes on and talks about something else, and then it starts on a little story or anecdote or something, and then just disappears and just fades away, and you realise actually you're reading along with Guy Montag, and that's quite a cool thing. His character is well developed. You know, it tells you a little bit about what's going on in his head and things, but a lot of it actually comes through in like the disjointedness of the writing and things like that. Beatty is a fantastic antagonist. I really enjoy him. He doesn't do anything except try and wind up other people, and it's really strange because one of the reasons that they burn books is because they're offensive and they bring up too many ideas, and too many ideas make people unhappy. Yet the fire chief is obviously very well read, and he has lots of ideas, and he brings up all these ideas, lots as many different ideas as he possibly can, and makes other people as unhappy as they possibly can, even though his mission in life is to burn books and therefore make people happy. So he's like this really strange, you know, twisted character, and as well, and what happens to him in the book is actually very satisfying, and again, very horrific, quite horrific. And then there's Guy's wife as well, who's just this nobody of a character. Well, it's not so much a nobody of a character, but you're looking there, and she just spends all day sitting in front of the television. But it's not a television, because the television, the whole walls of their living room, of their video parlor, and she watches these soap operas and calls the soap opera characters her family. And yeah, you can really see this is some great sort of futurology by Ray Bradbury about, like, the, you know, the reality TV and all, like the crassness of television and how it completely dumbs everyone down, and that it becomes a drug, you become addicted to it. So that's also quite strange there as well. And other characters, yeah, you've got some secondary characters, of course, Mildred's friends, and you've got later on this professor who I think pretty much is Ray Bradbury talking at this point, but again, you can't really tell very much there. Overall, the characters, I really enjoyed the characters. Some of them are sort of one-dimensional, but of course, they're meant to be one-dimensional, but then in some ways, like this one-dimensional wife of Montag, when Guy Montag actually starts reading books and, you know, bringing books home from his fireman duties. He brings the books home to read them. She actually sticks with him for a while, you know, and actually goes with him and then betrays him later on. But it's actually quite interesting that she has like a snapping point as well. And as soon as she's gone out of the story, she's just completely gone. And again, it just shows how little Guy and Mildred as a husband and wife had in common with each other, that they could pretty much ignore each other. And when they each disappeared from each other's lives, they're just gone like this. Moving on then. Oh, no, I was going to finish off the story, though. There are some parts of the story, like the whole war, nuclear war thing that's going on there. It just seems to be, like, shoved in there at the end. And you're thinking, well, there could have been a bit more satisfying kind of resolution here, because it's like, you think, oh, well, maybe Montag could do something to change everything, or maybe, you know, maybe he'd team up with Beatty, the fire officer, or Faber, you know, these other guys, and they'd change the system from the inside. But the way that it's actually all wrapped up at the end isn't that satisfying. And also, when he actually leaves the city and meets up with these other people, there's like the kind of science behind that idea that you don't actually need to have the books. You can just, you know, the human mind is really incredible, and they've got ways of getting books out of people, so you don't actually need the physical books. You can burn all the books, but the books will still exist in people's memories. That sort of stretched things a bit there, but otherwise, the story, I wouldn't say it's that satisfying. I think the actual story part of this, the way it sort of fades away a little bit at the end. I don't really want to say it fades away, but it doesn't really, it didn't really click to me, the resolution of the story there. Moving on to some of the science and technology ideas in this science fiction book. You've got the earbuds, which are sort of like very small headphones with radios coming into them, and people walk around and they're connected to the earbuds all the time, and, you know, they're constantly getting drivel into their ears, which is like, you know, radio, but it's not so much radio, because these days radio is very much about the talk, and it seems to be much more about the mindless music, or the mindless, you know, just input of media just coming in like a drug, like the walls in the parlor. And this is something I really liked, was the walls, these video screens as big as the walls, and it really immerses you. And it reminds me a little bit of, like, I guess the holodeck on Star Trek or something like that. I guess that's the kind of effect that they're going for. Or maybe the film Sunshine, if you've seen that, they have this sort of like completely surrounded, videos in every direction, everywhere that you look is a little bit more video input, and it's completely overwhelming. And you can have these big fireworks displays, but then it's completely superficial as well. Like the stories that are told, you know, guy asks his wife, well, what's the story about? It's like, well, you know, there was this guy and there was this girl and there was this thing. And she's like, what's the thing? You know, there was a thingy, a what's it? And he's like, no, really, what was it about? He says, oh, there was this thing that it happened and it was good and this other person didn't like it and it's great. It's like, no, really, what happened? And there's nothing there except sort of like events happening on screen. And they take this sort of like almost like drug-induced trip. Well, it's not so much even a drug-induced trip. It's sort of like something which when you'd look at is sort of like this big sort of fantasia kind of event, but without any storyline at all. It's just sort of like things being shown to you, like the visualization in Winamp or iTunes or somewhere, where you just click it, you know, press Control T in iTunes, and it's sort of like whoosh, 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 whoosh. That's all that you get. You know, there's no substance to it at all, which could be a fantastic like learning tool or something like that, but it isn't. It's just reduced down to mindless entertainment, a little bit like television, but even more so. The one of the coolest inventions, I think, and one of the least, you know, it's one of the least well-developed inventions almost, is the hound. Because, you know, you got the firemen and they do stuff, and there's the police, but the police, they track people with the mechanical hound. And this is just something that can smell people. It's like a robot dog, an eight-legged robot dog, which can track people through the streets. You know, it can pick out one person's scent in 10,000. And that's pretty cool. And of course, there is the scenes with the hound, and that's actually quite exhilarating and quite exciting. And also what I really liked is that it goes, okay, everyone's watching the hound chase down the guy who the hound is chasing on television, and they're going, okay, where is it? And they're going, oh, like this. So it actually becomes like, as you see with the TV. Pola's actually getting naked here for the webcam. I think that's Pola. That's great. No, it's okay, we couldn't see it. Oh, you ran away at exactly the time that I turned the screen. Anyway, so yes, no, I didn't see you. I think I saw a flash of a little bit of skin. Anyway, that was just a little thing. I think this chat room has stopped. I can't see the chat room going well. Maybe if I refresh it. Here we go. Let me just refresh that. Anyway, yes, let's get on to it here. So what was I saying? Oh, yeah, about the live chases with the mechanical hound is quite good fun. And I said, again, it sort of pre-shadows the, what am I trying to say? Yeah, with like the live, you know, helicopter chases, and hey, see this live chase going on right now, you know, and it's all going quite interesting. Preview of the future that we have there, a little prediction by Ray Bradbury. I completely lost my track of thought with Pola getting naked next to me. There's, like I said before, the other technological ideas. Some of them are a little bit dated. Some of them are very interesting. Some of them not so interesting, I guess. But there's a lot of things to talk about there. Let me move on, I guess, to the themes of the book. Now, one of the reasons why I wanted to read this book is, again, not just because it was reviewed on this other blog, or the screenplay was reviewed on the blog, and just because it was there, it's also because this thing with the Kindle recently, Amazon Kindle. What happened was there was a book, 1984, which is all about government control and censorship and changing history and all that kind of stuff. And you know, there's the whole idea of that book is that, you know, the government completely controlling the media. And when the news changes, history changes at the same time. So you go, okay, so we're now at war with this other people. Quick, change everything. And they get in the books, and they burn all of the books and change all the books and print new books with the new, like, real. Now we're at war with this. We've always been at war with Oceania, that kind of thing. So that's the reason why the media's controlled there. And what happened is that someone actually put this book onto Kindle, the Kindle reader, who didn't have an account for it. Or no, didn't have an, they put it on their account, and they didn't have the rights to the book, to sell the book. Goodbye, Polly. And so what happened was that the Kindle Amazon went on to everybody's books and deleted them. And everyone went, wow, that's really ironic. 1984 being deleted from history. And I thought, well, that is very ironic. It couldn't get any more ironic than them changing, you know, actually going onto your device and taking it away. The other thing that people said, though, was that, hey, it would be even more ironic if it was Fahrenheit 451, because that's really about censorship. That's all about burning books and stuff like that. And I was thinking, wait a second, is it really about censorship? It is in a way, because you do have all the burning of books and things like that. But I read it and I thought it really isn't about censorship, because you actually get to the point where, you know, the fire chief, what was his name again? BT, he's talking to Guy and he's saying, well, this is the reason why everything's happening here. You know, it's actually not because it's government censorship. The government didn't want anyone to read. It was actually the dumbing down of everyone, and then all of the minorities being upset by the literature and saying, well, we're going to burn this. You know, here's a book and it's like, you know, it's got too much violence in it, so I'm going to burn it. It's offensive to me. It makes me unhappy. And this other minority says, well, this is racist, so I'm going to burn this bit. And this mentions this part of history and I don't like that piece of history and it makes me unhappy, so I'm going to burn that. The idea of Fahrenheit 451 is that it's a grassroots kind of thing. It's actually the people who were really upset, and it was the people who were didn't like the reading, and they sort of started going away from reading. And also it comes down to like the television reducing stuff down, so instead of actually reading the book, no, you don't need to read the book, tell you what, let's just watch the TV version, let's just watch the film, so you can actually just watch the film of the book. And it's like, okay, that's really cool. We can just watch the film. We don't actually have to we don't have to read the book. And then you go, oh, well, the book takes too long. What you should do is just watch this TV program. And that takes too long. Let's just talk about the TV program and get it down to sort of like these, you know, great books, and they're reduced down to like nothing at all except for like, you know, 3 or 4 minutes worth. And everything's reduced down to a soundbite, and everything's reduced down to some kind of little thing which doesn't even make any sense, you know, because it's so reduced down to a soundbite. And so that's what this is about. You know, there's nothing to do with the Kindle or books being removed from the Kindle could have anything to do with this. It's more the point of, like, you know, saying, oh, this book is really offensive, so anyone who's got it on the Kindle, I think you should stop reading it on the Kindle and delete it. And everyone else going, yeah, we should all just delete it from the Kindle. And this massive, like, grassroots movement of everyone going, hey, let's delete this from the Kindle. Yeah, let's delete this from the Kindle. That's the kind of thing. And it really made me think. I'm thinking, wait a second, all these commentators, because I read it on some blogs, you know, and I read it on some, you know, forums, and people mention it on podcasts and things like that. And I'm going, okay, did you actually read this book? And I'm thinking, this is the real irony, is that all the commentators are saying that it's ironic, when it's actually not ironic. But due to the dumbing down, they've reduced Fahrenheit 451 down to the soundbite that it's all about book burning and it's all about censorship. So you've got this really strange thing, but it's not that. But them reducing it down to that soundbite, it's like, oh yeah, you don't even need to read Fahrenheit 451 because it's just about this. It's not about that thing. So it's exactly what the book warns against will happen in the future. The commentators are then using this example, but missing the example that's actually in the book, to then talk about the book in a way which is reduced. You understand what I'm saying there? I mean, I'm talking a little bit sort of around in circles here, but I think it's actually more ironic that all the commenters are missing the point of Fahrenheit 451, and they work in the media and they're reducing everything things down to sound bites themselves in this way, you know. So it's not about political control. Of course, in the book Fahrenheit 451, there is, in the future, it comes down to this, that it is a government-controlled kind of thing, and, you know, and it is government-sanctioned, the burning of books, and it actually becomes illegal to do that. But it didn't start off with that. It started off with people being absorbed with television and instead of reading, and then becoming, you know, every minority being offended, and people shouldn't be allowed to be offended. Everyone should be allowed to live happy lives and things like that. So that's a bit of a pity, but that is one of the main themes, and there is other themes in there, but I think the main theme of this book is the anti-intellectualism. That is the main message of this book, rather than about the government censorship. If you want that, well, let's check out. I think I might actually read in a few books' time. I'll do an Aldous Huxley, you know, Brave New World, and I'll do a 1984 review as well. You know, get these classics of you know, dystopian science fiction, literary classics in science fiction books, and I'll review them all as well. I could go into other themes of the book, but I think that sort of touches on the main one. But again, I don't just want to reduce it down to that, because that's not the point of the book. Anyway, moving on, like I say, to the writing style. Now, this was something I was having a little bit of trouble in with the book, and then it was good, and then I was thinking, oh, is it really? I'm not really sure. And it's one of those strange things where I'm like a bit sort of, how to say it? I'm like, I'm thinking, am I going to make too many excuses about how much I enjoy this? For example, I don't have the book in front of me, so I can't read out any of the examples that I wanted to say as I was reading the book here. But there are quite a few cool things in the book. For example, there's lots of like these hanging sentences, or not so much hanging sentences, but hanging paragraphs. He'll start a topic, or you know, Montag will start thinking about something, and he'll think about it for about three or four lines, and then it'll suddenly stop, and then he'll go off in some other direction. And these sort of like non-sequiturs, they really sort of bring out the conflict of the character that he doesn't. There's no way for you to think in this future society and long, cogent thoughts. The only thing that you can do is sort of, as you're reading it, you're like, okay. Oh, and then he's off on some other thing, you know, and he's talking about this event. It's like, oh, no, let me talk about over there. And I'm thinking, okay, that's definitely into it. Or maybe I'm just reading this into it. Maybe it's just badly written, but I'm getting more out of it than there should have been there, you know. And also, one of the characters, BT specifically, he uses overwhelming amount of quotes from all kinds of different literature. And there's just, you know, you just got me, like, there's so many literary references being brought out by these characters, and you're just overwhelmed by it. But then again, I'm being overwhelmed by it as a reader, and so is Montag, a guy Montag, as the character. That's the whole point. He's being overwhelmed by it, and it's like long, and it's too much, and he's never had this much culture being pumped into him before in his life, you know. And then there's, you know, there's all these other kind of writing style kind of ideas and literary kind of ideas. And again, maybe I'm being a little bit too kind on the book to say, oh, I think this is actually intentional writing styled, and the sort of like the clunkiness of the writing brings out like the dystopia and the way that, you know, Montag is thinking about things. You know, maybe I don't know if I'm doing this, you know, in too much of a forgiving way, but I really enjoyed the writing style. And one of the reasons I really enjoyed it was that I didn't like it, and it was a bit jarring. So it's one of those kind of, you know, things that I can't really bring out. But there are some cool things. And again, read the blog post by the Mystery Man on Film. I think it's mysterymanonfilm.blogspot.com. I'll put a link in the show notes. He brings out these like ways of building tensions in the scenes and things like that, and other things as well. Like, for example, when Clarissa, she dies, and it's like, okay, where did she go to? And it's left as a mystery in the book. But the jarring feeling that Montag has when she disappears out of his life, it's sort of like the same kind of thing. You're reading the book and she's just gone after 20 pages, and you're like, wow, she was like a main character in the book. There's only like 8 people in the whole book who are given names, and that she's one of them. And she's like one of the main reasons for the book to exist, for the story to even happen in the first place. And yet she disappears. And you're thinking, well, that's quite unsatisfying. But then that kind of mystery is there as well. But again, the way that she said she's disappeared does sort of foreshadow something that happens later in the book. It's like, oh, she got hit by a car. Oh, yeah, the roads are really dangerous, you know. And then, of course, later in the book, when Guy Montag is running away from the authorities, he gets to this road, and that's sort of like a massive big tension part. And, like, him crossing the road takes 4 seconds, but it takes, like, 8 pages in the book because it's such a big thing. But then the reason why him crossing the road, I don't want to give it away too much, is so inconsequential and doesn't even have anything to do with the rest of the story. But then again, that's the kind of world that they're living in. So yeah, the writing style I think is interesting, and the way it's written is very good. So overall, I'm going to have to give this book, I'm not going to give it like a 4 stars. I don't think it's quite a 4-star book, because I did enjoy it in some ways, but like, I think overall the story just didn't grab me this time. There are some parts with a lot of tension, but it did start feeling a bit flat, and it does get a bit too preachy. I think for so much being portrayed there in so little words, you know, it's a very short book, but there's so much happening in that first sort of like 2/3 of the book. The last third of the book does lose its way a little bit too much. And then the very ending of the book is, of course, it's grim, but then it's trying to be hopeful and grim at the same time. So that's a bit strange as well. So overall, I think I'm going to give it 3.5 stars. Now, I do want to talk a little bit more about it, because that's the book. Now, the book that the version that I read was a hardcover, and it's, I think it was called the 50th anniversary version, and it had sort of like three different introductions, you know, prologue, well, not so much prologues, but introductions written by Ray Bradbury about how he wrote it. And the way that he wrote it, it was first as a short story, and then it was a novella, and then he like doubled the length of it to make it into sort of like the short novel that it is now. And it's actually still quite a quick read, so definitely check it out. It's definitely worth reading. You can read it in like an afternoon, two afternoons or something like that. But he couldn't find anyone to publish it. And in the end, it was first published, serialized, in the first four issues of Playboy. And it's really strange that you think, well, okay, Playboy. And it's sort of like, you go, okay, this is now in the classic section of the library. It's being taught in schools. And it was first, the only people to first, you know, the only person to first dare publish it was in Playboy, you know, which was quite interesting. And also, Ray Bradbury does mention in the introduction, he does also, I didn't read the introduction, I read it after I finished the book. And he actually did mention at one point that it wasn't all about censorship, even though that's what is mainly being looked at now. It is about anti-intellectualism. So I think I'm on the side of the author when I say that too. But of course, it is a big thing about censorship as well. You know, it's not just about anti-intellectualism, but I think that's the main reason. You know, that's the main point of it. And he talks about that too. The thing is, if you do get the 50th anniversary version, only read one of the introductions because they're quite repetitive. It's like one of them was written for the, you know, for the 1974 reprinting, and another one was written for the 1992 reprinting, and they're the same kind of thing. And it really feels like it was added to the book just to pad out the hardback version of the book. So I think that's all I want to say about Fahrenheit 451. I'm just saying, as a sort of like science fiction classic dystopian, certainly nowhere near as good as, you know, 1984. And it's been quite a long time since I've read Brave New World as well. I think I remember Brave New World being a bit better than this as well. Yeah, there's something else I wanted to mention. Oh, yeah, I live in Berlin. Of course, I actually live not too far away from the place where the sort of like, not the original book burning took place, because, you know, they've been burning books for a long, long time. Down at the Babelplatz in the centre of Berlin, that's where the books were first burnt back in 1932. And it was all, of course, a big media event, and it happened at night. And the reason why it happened at night is because it looked really good for the cameras. That's also, that kind of idea is brought out here in the book. It's like, do you realize, yeah, so like, do you ever notice how we only ever burn books at night, you know, because it looks better? And it's like, yeah, all the action takes place at night, you know, when you're burning anything, that's cool. But there's this quote there on the memorial to the book burning, and it's a line from a Schiller. No, not Schiller. Is it Schiller? I can't remember. The German playwright, and he was writing about the Spanish Inquisition, and there's this line in one of his plays that he wrote back in like 1850 or something like that. 1852 he wrote this play, and in it there's a line, where they first begin burning books, they end by burning people, or where you first begin burning books, you end by burning people. It's a famous line with people who know about the book burnings, you know, and where it started with book burning and it led on to the Holocaust. Now, I think it's actually you know, sort of like an interesting comment there about book burning. If it is sort of like a state instituted thing that you burn books, it probably leads on to a very like a state which is very violent towards its people. But I didn't actually get that here in this book. You know, there's sort of like an ambivalence between the state to the people, like to the population, but there isn't any kind of violence towards them. There's violence between them, and, you know, violence between them isn't discouraged, but it actually seems like that the state itself isn't as, you know, it's not some kind of fascist state. It's very totalitarian, of course, but, you know, there's this quite strange disconnect that it's almost like they really do have the best interest of the peoples at heart. But again, it's a bit strange. Anyway, so moving on, I will quickly go through some of the comments that we had in the chat room here. So what did we have here? Oh yeah, people liked Pola's skin in the background of the video. Oh yes, talking about UK tabloid press, that's pretty much the level of the entertainment here. And also, there's quite a tradition of science fiction and mysteries being published in men's magazines. Yes, there is that tradition as well. Probably goes back to, you know, Playboy, or maybe even beyond it. But I was just thinking that, you know, one of the ironies is that this is actually the only people who would dare publish something like this, which would be very offensive to a lot of people, was Playboy. And it was more about sort of like the political correctness and the offensiveness of things. And it's sort of like, oh, this should be banned. Oh, that offends me. It should be banned. Oh, that should be offends me. It should be banned. And that was actually written about in Playboy, which should be banned because it's offensive to me and women think it's offensive and all that kind of stuff. I don't know. I just think more printing of everything. So that's cool. Next book that I'm going to read, actually, I'm going to read is actually this one. Maybe I'll hold it up here for the camera, see if anyone can see it. It is called The Steel Remains by Richard Morgan. It's not a science fiction book. It's a fantasy book. So I won't be reviewing that. Actually, I've got my pile of books here next to me here. So the next book after that that I have that I just bought new, this Steel Remains just came out in paperback, so I thought I'd give it a go. But I also do have Richard Morgan's other book, so I'll read this one as well. Market Forces, that I've not read. That's a science fiction book. So I'll check that one out. Also, I have Galactic North by Alistair Reynolds. And again, all of his books, I mentioned this before, all of his books seem to just be a black book with a spaceship on the front of him. So I can never tell them apart. So I'm thinking, have I read this book before? I don't know. I got it at the second-hand bookshop. I have Steel Beach by Steve Varley, another thing that, you know, everyone's talking about. Hey, this is really great, this whole sort of like military science fiction kind of thing, because I've been reading a bit of that recently, and people are going and saying Steel Beach is good, so I might check that one out. Also, I have Stephen Donaldson here. I read The Real Story, but in this two-part book, we also have Forbidden Knowledge, and I was actually having a great conversation with Alan, who's changed his name to Sophie, now wears a dress, from the bookshop around the corner, And she was saying that, you know, we had a good conversation about The Real Story, and it seems like we come to some similar conclusions about that book and about some other writers as well. I've also got this, I just bought this as well in paperback. I bought R. Scott Bakker, The Warrior Prophet, because I read The Prince of Nothing last year and enjoyed it. And I thought, well, I'll check this one out as well. So there's two fantasy books there and four science fiction books. So you'll get some reviews of some of these anyway. Hopefully you'll enjoy those ones. I think that's all I've got to say. Yes, so I'm not quite sure when the next book is going to be, because I'm actually going to start writing my next novel, because it's August. It's another 3 months. And so I'll start it. And I've been doing a lot of planning for this one, a lot more than I previously done. So you can check that out on my blog, where I've written about that. And I worked out that, hey, I've got this really great story idea. Story idea had been in my head for ages. And I thought, well, there's this one story that I wanted to do it in a way that there's like two stories being told, but one of them starts where the other one ends, but they come together, like the two stories end at the end of the book. But you're sort of, you know, reading both of them up to that point. And I realized, actually, it's not going to work. I'm going to have to tell these two stories separately, because I realized that the structure of one story, I thought, well, this is going to tie in at that point, it's going to tie in at that point, it's going to tie in at that point, it's going to be great. But I think what I'm going to do is, instead of actually writing them together as one book, I think I'm just going to write another two short novellas, starting off with the backstory one, going up to one point, and then I'm going to start the other one. So I'm having to stop and go, wait. Let's go back to the planning stage again, back to the drawing board, and go, right, okay, let's just isolate these stories a lot, you know, let's isolate them a lot further, and I'll see if I can write them separately and maybe not come back. I'm not sure how I'm going to do this, but I realized that I wasn't telling one story at all. I was actually telling two very distinct stories with different themes, and I thought the themes tied together a lot closer, but it seems like as I'm going through the planning, the stories are sort of taking on a life of their own in a way, so I can't get that. So anyway, yes, so check out my writings on that. I'm sure I'll write a little bit more about that on my blog, so you can check that out, lukeburridge.com/blog, or you can follow me on Twitter if you want smaller updates. That's @LukeBurridge at Twitter, or whatever is there. Follow me on goodreads.com/LukeBurridge, because in that way you can keep up with the books I'm reading and the books I've got at home and all that kind of stuff. And finally, what was the other thing that I normally say? Oh yes, email me, luke@juggler.net, if you've got any different things. And also, if you've listened to this, although it's a bit late to say this now, if you listen to this as an audio, you can actually watch the video, bad quality video file as well. Just go to ustream.tv/LukeBurridge or channel gmail.com/LukeBurridge. You'll work it out. I'll put links in the podcast there. And probably in the next podcast that I do, I will also do as a video stream. So maybe we'll get a few more than just five people watching or coming and going. So the next time, so if you subscribe to Twitter, I'll actually advertise, promote it a little bit earlier. I'll put some stuff up in the podcast feed as well to say, hey, live show happening here as well. So keep an eye out for that. Otherwise, thanks for watching, thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time, or I'll catch you guys next time.